Hey, everybody, welcome to this week's episode of the OIG Roundtable. We're here again with another exciting episode, talking a lot about what's going on in the world today, what's going on in the government, what's going on in the private sector, what's happening with SIUs and plans. Here with my two compadres, Matt Kachansky, retired special agent in charge from the OIG, the retired Northeast UPIC director, and the director of our payment integrity team here. And then Wade McFall, retired assistant special agent in charge from the LA field office, having his pulse on all things OIG from LA, and a manager on the SIU investigative team. So we want to talk about, we're going to stay away from the political turmoil that is currently going on in government. But as everybody has clearly seen, there have been thousands of layoffs in government. And we're not here to talk about whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. Over at HHS globally, I believe I've seen the numbers as high as 5,000 people at CMS being let go, most people in probationary status. And again, we're not talking from the political perspective about whether those people's jobs were legitimate or illegitimate. But what we do want to talk about is that there are those collateral effects, right? We're seeing left and right organizations are looking to have their employees go back to the office for work. It's not just in the government. It's not just on the executive orders. We're seeing this in the commercial space as well. People are being sent back to the office. And, you know, with that, you're going to have some attrition because there are going to be people who got hired for jobs where there was no office for them to go to. And so we're going to see some attrition. We're going to see people making some shifts. Just recently, one of the big banking organizations, credit card organizations, just put out an edict to mandate all of its employees come back. We've seen it in tech. There's a push to get back to working back in the office. So everybody needs to get their puffy jackets on and get back to your finance bro look and get back to the office. But, you know, with that comes a lot of movement. People are going to leave jobs. There's going to be a lot of attrition that's going to come about from people moving and things of that sort. And so, Wade, I want to start with you because, you know, one of the things from the managerial perspective is, you know, when there's turnover, there's turmoil. You know, outside of the gossip mongering that goes, you know, the functions of an organization still need to take place. And whether you think that the organization is going to be able to continue to function at the level that it was or the level that it should be is always going to be subject to conversation. But, you know, one thing that becomes an important piece of this is that when you have a unit and you are managing people, places, and things, it's super important to make sure that's why case reviews are important. That's why knowing where cases are, and that's why that cross collaboration in payment integrity comes in, right? We see it all the time. People retire, they go to another agency, they go to another job, but the functions of the organization still need to happen. And so from that leadership perspective, it really is important to have your finger on the pulse of not only the cases, but the people, places, and things. And then, the perspective has to be that you can't live siloed, right? There has to be this ability to communicate with other organizations. And just as much as you would spend a lot of your time in LA talking with other stakeholders internally to HHS, it was also having those conversations with U.S. Attorney's offices, the MFUCU, Medicaid, to be able to understand what are going to be those shifting priorities with changing of staff and the overturning of staff or budget. You know, in the government, we used to always RIFs, right? Reduction in force, and to be able to deal with what that looks like.
Yeah, and I think kind of in comparing it, the OIG world to the SIU world, bottom line is it comes down to like something we talk about all the time, and that's like ROI, and that's an ROI killer when somebody leaves, whether they're fired or they leave for a different job. We didn't, at least where I worked, we didn't really use the term ROI like we do in the public sector. But it's, you know, it's a matter of productivity, really is the same thing. So once somebody leaves, the productivity just stops for, you could look at it as for a month or so, but if you really want to look at what it takes to get a new agent up to speed, it's one thing if you can get somebody from another region to transfer over, then you don't have as much loss in productivity. But if you tend to bring on new agents, like brand new off the street, which we did a lot of that in LA just because of the whole mindset of we wanted to teach them the way we do things and not have them bring bad habits from different agencies. But if you look at it from that perspective, between going to the basic academy training and then agency specific training, that the first year is pretty much, there's really no productivity as far as pushing cases through for like a year. And kind of the same way with an SIU, maybe not quite a year, but you're looking at things like, you know, when somebody leaves, you have that time frame where you have to rewrite up the job description. You have to leave it open for a couple weeks. Then you start looking at resumes and doing interviews. So even just to bring somebody on board can take weeks, if not months. And then once they come on board, there's all kinds of issues, kind of clean or avoiding getting them right up to speed and, you know, being productive. And that's things like, you know, onboarding issues, tech issues. There's always computer issues, like with the SIU. If it's a CMS contract, there's so much tech stuff that has to be worked out, like Cisco AnyConnect, remote desktops, things of that nature. So there's that time frame. But one of the ways to kind of maybe not avoid it, but to help in that loss of productivity is if you do have the team approach, where like in the OI world, you might have co-case agents. So for each case, there's like a primary case agent who knows the case inside and out. And because a lot of the activities require more than one agent, so if you have another agent assigned, they can be like a backup and they can still have knowledge of that case. So if the primary case agent leaves for whatever reason, whether they leave on their own or they get fired, which is somewhat rare for the OI, but you have another agent who can pick up that case and you know, move with it. And not only just the co-case agent, but if you work jointly with like the Office of Audit Services, we have, you know, people who are experts in like computer seizure, that type of thing. So if you have a lot of different people that have had their hands on the case, whether it be through search warrants, interviews, whatever, it's not like somebody picking it up and having to learn it from scratch. And the same thing goes with the SIU world, where you won't necessarily have a co-investigator, but you have, you know, investigators paired up with CPCs who know the case. They're doing the medical review on it. So if you have more than one person that's kind of familiar with the case, that lack of productivity isn't going to stretch out as far.
Right. Well, you know, and the one point you talked about was, you know, within the OIG about this premise of ROI, return on investment. The reality is that HHS OIG is one of the only agencies that I could ever think of where there is an ROI component, right? Remember back in the day when, you know, certainly around the time that you were hired and then around the time I was hired, the Operation Restore Trust. So for those of you that want to get your historical Medicare geek on, you can do a little bit of searching for something called Operation Restore Trust. 1995, HHS and the Social Security Administration broke away from each other. Social Security became its own organization. Now, while it doesn't have a secretary like HHS, it has a commissioner that's appointed by the president, and they do have an IG, and they have their own agents. And in 1995, when HHS and Social Security split, if your caseload was primarily a Social Security fraud caseload, you moved and became a Social Security agent. If your caseload was primarily healthcare, you became a healthcare agent. Well, as part of Operation Restore Trust, meaning the Medicare Trust Fund, both agencies wound up having to do a very large hiring because half the staff went from one agency to another. And as part of Operation Restore Trust, the way that they got that money was through basically taking money out of the Medicare Trust Fund and using it to fund investigations, audits, and the like. And there was an early adoption of working primarily Part A cases. So if you were hired in the first round of Operation Restore Trust, you were working primarily home health, hospice, nursing home cases, things of that sort. And then in later years, it just changed. But HHS OIG to this day still has an ROI component to it because of partly the funding that comes out is not just from appropriations, meaning Congress doesn't just give a pot of money to the agency and say, go. There's a return on investment, and HHS OIG proudly has been able to you know, exceed what the amounts are. You know, in some years it's as high as 7 and 8 to 1, which, you know, from an ROI perspective is really pretty unbelievable. So there's, it's kind of an odd ROI in that sense, versus a plan, which, you know, is direct dollars and things of that sort. So, but Matt, you know, the other piece of this becomes, you know, from that, you know, you're our payment integrity director here. We have turnover just like everybody else. You know, people leave for more money. They leave for potentially promotional opportunities. Sometimes they just leave the industry entirely. It doesn't really matter why people leave, but, you know, we're not, advice here, as great as it may be to work here, is no different than any other organization. And the biggest thing is, you know, thinking about priorities and the importance of interacting in different ways than maybe previously thought of from that SIU perspective, payment integrity perspective. Does the, you know, is the SIU still working a $5,000 case, even if it's an overpayment, or are they shipping that off to payment integrity and just saying, you guys deal with it because we also are dealing with reduced resources?
Yeah, it's a combination of things you have to do. Starting off with any organization, government, private sector, they have to be agile because things are shifting constantly. You know, right now you're seeing people being, we've seen a lot of layoffs in the private sector, especially in the program integrity aspect. We're seeing people being laid off there. We're seeing shifts in funding, and I think, you know, the government, I'm sure they're looking at funding down the line, Medicaid funding, Medicare funding, Social Security funding. They're looking at those things to see if there's going to be shifts. So you have to be agile to those shifts as well, because those are just commonplace. They go on all the time. This, you know, the scope of the government, you know, layoffs and things like that is probably pretty presidential, but it happens every administration. There's hiring freezes. There's they bring people on and all that. You have to be agile in that. The way to do that is you have to be able to prioritize things constantly. You know, what are the things that are most important to the SIU, to program integrity, and keep those things as the number one priorities, whether it's big cases or the most vulnerable areas of the plans. Those things have to be first and foremost in any type of caseload management for an SIU. And the other thing you have to do is collaborate and cooperate with other functions in the program integrity section, so that if these things are happening, you don't have the resources in your branch of that arm to do these things. You have to be able to work with the other branch. Can you take this? Can you take this over and do this so that the plan as a whole doesn't suffer because of shifts in funding or shifts in resources? You know, Wade, you talked right about, you know, the cost of bringing people on, you know, to replace others. Seems like we're, you know, there are times, and this might be one of them, that there are no replacements, that you just have to lose people and then figure out what to do with what you've got left. And that's where proper planning, real leadership, and real collaborative leadership with other people within your organization is absolutely necessary to continue the good work that we've been doing. You know, with the UPIC, right, this is an anecdote. I was probably my worst day ever as a program director. Was we won the contract. We won the UPIC contract, but we wanted it less money than we had bid, you know, that we were using in our prior contract, the predecessor contract. So yeah, yay, we won. Now you got to get rid of 20% of your workforce and still be able to do the UPIC work, which was more in scope than what we were doing before. And it was right, working with, you know, data, with the clinical staff, with the investigative staff, with the MACs, with our partners and the other UPICs, to make sure that we could be able to do that.
And that's a huge challenge, Matt. You know, and the one thing that you bring up, you know, about this collaboration, you know, one of the things that we're fortunate here is that a lot of the plans that we do the SIU and payment integrity work for are these small plans that didn't have it beforehand or had it in a very, you know, limited sense, non-existent, or maybe not even functional. And one of the things that we've been able to do is use our expertise to be able to bring SIU and payment integrity together, because it was an empty canvas, basically. It wasn't, you know, these are smaller plans that where we have the ability to kind of do that. And as an organization grows, that becomes a bigger challenge. For example, trying to stand up a prepay for a plan that never had it. And if you do it when the plan has 30 members, it's a lot easier because you're standing up a prepay for maybe one provider, two providers. You're ramping it up. It's slow. As the plan grows, your prepay grows, but it's an organic development. Very different from plans who have 1 million or 2 million members, didn't have a prepay, and then launch a prepay. There's growing pains with that, and it takes a lot of effort. So, you know, we're fortunate that we're able to bring the payment integrity and the SIU kind of together for some of these plans that are smaller but growing, and relying upon these prior experiences and just the knowledge and expertise, because you really need to be able to, that the landscape is very difficult to navigate. How many people, you know, they come in on a Monday and they give their 2 weeks notice, or, you know, the people that come on a Friday at 5:05 and they just send you an email saying, I apologize for the late notice, but I'm resigning my position effective 5:03 and it's 5:04. You know, and that happens, right? It happens. And so you have to have some of these things in place, right? So Wade's perspective of keeping up on case reviews, making sure that your cases are the cream of the crop. And then Matt, from your perspective, it's that cross collaboration to know if you get something in that is not cream of the crop, but needs to be dealt with, how do you address it? You can't just ignore these things, particularly, you know, when you've got something, if there's a program weakness or something like that, which is why it is important for plans to take a bottom up approach and a top down approach, management top down and bottom up. How are these cases being worked and what are the priorities?
Yeah, and you're right. We've seen plenty of examples with some of our smaller plans where their existing SIU were doing things that a traditional SIU wouldn't do, you know, single member complaints and enrollment issues that they were handling, rather than the, you know, the enrollment, you know, the enrollment arm of the plan or whatever it might be. Working with those small plans, you know, we would have meetings where everybody, all of those partners were in the room at the same time. And that made the communication much easier. And we were able to lay out, this is what the SIU does, this is what they do, and this is,
right.
And then we would work out those types of workflows and processes. Larger plans, very bureaucratic. I mean, you know, we work with a plan that has 4 million members, you know, trying to do just getting a medical record request approved takes 2 months.
Right.
Yeah,
and that is a huge challenge. And we do see these instances with these smaller plans where they've got the SIU investigator looking at some member complaint. You know, it's not even an SIU, you know, it is really a function maybe of education to the provider. It's an enrollment issue. It's a network issue. And we see oftentimes the SIU, unfortunately, is the place where people go and they have nowhere else to go within the organization. They sometimes will go to the SIU and say, well, you know, you all know all the different people and all the different departments, and so you can help to facilitate this. And I think that as organizations start to tighten their belt, leadership within payment integrity and the SIU need to be able to become more hyper-focused and vigilant with what are the people on these teams doing? And are they, you know, are the resources being used in the proper way?
Even if they're spending time on the enrollment issue, they're not spending time on the $1 million overpayment case that's sitting
right
there.
And then the ROI is an intangible ROI on, yes, you've resolved an issue, you've made a member happy, you've resolved an issue, you've gotten a provider to be sure to be paid the proper way, but you've done it at the risk of not being able to timely obtain the information that you need for future reporting. So, you know, it's a tough, you know, it's a tough thing. And I think, you know, the problem that I'm seeing is that people are segmenting government layoffs and government employees to commercial work. And I think we're going to see some, you know, we've already seen the shift in the commercial space of moving back to full-time work. We've seen some of the larger payers doing large layoffs that span across their enterprise. It's not just SIU. I think oftentimes SIU, unfortunately, SIU is not seen at the top of the food chain for a lot of things, because when providers get paid, they get paid. And the question becomes, is SIU the collateral effect of those payments, you know, clawing back that money? But, you know, oftentimes the payers, they've made the payment and that's already been accounted for. This is what we're paying. Anything that the SIU or payment integrity gets back is sometimes seen as bonus money, right? As a recovery. So we got to stay vigilant. We got to stay the course. You got to make sure that you're only working good cases, good vetting, cream of the crop, whatever cream of the crop is for your organization. A cream of the crop case for a small plan might be $1,500 or $2,000. But $1,500 or $200 or $2,000 is going to be a nothing case to a plan with 4 million members. So cream of the crop is a very subjective thing. And you've got to think about what, you know, what is the important piece from that payment integrity perspective. So tough times for a lot of people, having come from government, and, you know, Wade and Matt and I, and we have other people here that are government people. We understand what's going on. These are difficult times, and we're hoping that everybody finds a home very quickly, and gets on with that. And particularly for our coworkers and our friends who came from CMS, where they lost a lot of jobs. You know, it's just part of the alignment. You know, we've seen this not the first time. During the Clinton administration, it occurred. There were rifts and furloughs. For those of you old enough to remember, during the Reagan administration, when he fired all of the air traffic controllers. So these are things that happen within government. It's constantly happening. They call it reduction in force or RIF. It's a common thing in government. So, you know, it doesn't change in the commercial space, right? There's layoffs all the time in the commercial space too. And so from a payment integrity perspective, you just have to kind of have that plan in place about what are you going to do if you have a reduction in force. It's no different than continuing operations. If you have people that need to work other places, do they have the equipment, the technology, and the wherewithal to be able to do it? So we'll keep monitoring this. We'll see, you know, where things go, and, you know, keep working your cases, everybody, and stay strong and stay vigilant in your work. You know, you can do only what you can do. So as always, we're going to try to tackle these topics, and we're going to try to do it in as best we can and not make these political conversations, even though they are unfortunately very hot button topics. So we'll keep talking about how SIUs and how payment integrity and the space is affected. So as always, we appreciate everybody spending their time with us. The other day, someone messaged me and said that this was part of their drive to and from work. They've been listening to the 110 or 12 podcasts that we have. So I guess, you know, if you're not a fan of some of the other podcasts out there, then, you know, maybe we'll get invited to Joe Rogan's podcast someday. And, you know, maybe probably not, but, you know, you never know. You never know. So as always, thanks for tuning in. Again, you can get our podcast every week, Spotify, subscribe, YouTube channel. You can get them on YouTube, weekly newsletter every Friday. Just go to our website, adviseadvize.com. And until next time, we'll see you all on the next OIG Roundtable. Take care, everybody.
Thank you all.
Thank you.